Phil Muscatello and FinPods are authorized reps of MoneySherpa. The information in this podcast is general in nature and doesn't take into account your personal situation.
Shares for beginners. Weekend watch list.
G'day and welcome back to Shares for Beginners Weekend Watchlist, where we take a close look at an individual company that you may wish to consider for your watchlist. It's not a recommendation to buy, but a way for you to learn how Stockopedia screens for value. Joining me today is Chris Batchelor, and we're talking GUD Holdings, ASX code GUD. G'day Chris, how's it going? So what is the GUD story? What kind of company is this?
Strange name, but it's a company that's been around for a long time. It actually listed 60 years ago. And it's really undergone a lot of transformation, particularly in the last handful of years. So back when I was looking at GUD, you know, way back in the early 2000s, it was a conglomerate business. It had a whole range of different types of businesses that it held. And for example, if we look at 2010, their largest business was actually the consumer products to business. And they sold electrical appliances under the brand Sunbeam. They sold cleaning products under the brand Oates. They did have an automotive division, and they also had the Davey Water Products division. If we go back a couple of years before that, they even owned Victor Mowers.
Wow, it's a classic Australian company, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
My father actually worked at the Sunbeam factory when he came out from Italy.
Right, yeah. So yeah, they had all these brands. They were well-known brands, and they were a real mix. And it's interesting, you know, if you think back in time, for those of us old enough to remember, in the 80s, conglomerate businesses were all the rage. Whereas moving into the 90s, the concept of focus and specialization really became more dominant. Whereas previously, businesses had wanted to diversify by holding all these different businesses, the thought became, well, that's the role of investors to do that at a portfolio level, and businesses should specialize on the thing that they are most competitive in and that they're where their skills lie best. The one big company in Australia that defies that principle is Wesfarmers. They're still a conglomerate to this day, believing that, you know, that their skill is in fact in managing a portfolio of businesses. But for most businesses, and including GUD, they have focused their operations. GUD only sold off their water products division last year, but that was sort of the last step. And now they're calling themselves, and they are indeed, a pure play automotive business. So they focus on automotive accessories and automotive parts. And to do that, they've divided themselves into two businesses, but they're actually very similar businesses. One is what they call APG, or Auto Products Group, which is a business that they acquired in 2022, so not that long ago. And that was a Melbourne-based business. And acquiring that basically almost doubled their revenue size. That's a business that focuses on things like towing, trailers, functional accessories like cargo management, four-wheel drive equipment, that kind of stuff. And they sell that in the aftermarket, but also to original equipment manufacturers. So they have contracts with the likes of Toyota to provide things like bull bars and what have you. And then the other element they call their automotive division. You see what I mean by the distinction is not that clear. But under automotive, they've got things like auto electrical, so lighting and power management. And then they have a whole bunch of businesses underneath that. They sort of conglomerate all of those businesses into a division. Then they've got powertrain, they've got EVs, and they've got what they call undercars, so things like brakes and clutches and that sort of stuff.
So which segment looks at the aftermarket parts? Because that's an area that I particularly love. I do a little bit of my own car repairs and aftermarket parts. If listeners aren't aware, you can buy quite cheap parts that aren't the original manufacturer parts. And it's amazing the kind of bargains that can be found. Yeah, where is that in the conglomerate?
Yeah, well, I would have to say that it's in both divisions. Oh, that's not a very clear answer, but when you look
I thought it would be one or the other.
Yeah, you would think so. But things like Ryko make all the filters and stuff. That's in their automotive division. But then if you're looking for more for things, I guess more accessories are in the APG section. So if you're looking to improve your car, but if you're just looking to service your brakes, you would go to the automotive division. They own a business called DBA, which is a brakes business. But then if you're looking to add some fancy lights to your four-wheel drive, then you might go to one of their automotive divisions. They own Brown & Watson International, they own Projecta, a business called Gel in New Zealand, another business called Vision X, and they've even bought a business in Europe called Rindab. Yeah, it's to me, it's not a clear distinction, but that's the way they divide it up for their internal purposes.
So it is still a conglomerate, as you describe it, is it? These are all separate operations, the businesses operating under these umbrellas?
Yeah, they would say, no, it's not a conglomerate. They are all separate businesses, yes, but they're all sort of working together. So there's a lot of synergy between them. So, yeah, I think they're basically trying to bring it all together, but maintaining a separate house of brands. So they have literally probably 100 or more brands that they own, and they're not looking to consolidate those. But a lot of the behind the scenes, the support functions, all of that kind of thing, whilst there might be a separate legal entity, a lot of that will be managed as one business.
GUD says that the automotive aftermarket is driven by the size of the car park, which is PARC. What is the car park, PARC?
Yeah, so it's not a big place where we park our cars, although in one sense it is. Basically what it refers to is the entire amount of vehicles registered or on the road in Australia. So right now it's around 20.1 million cars in Australia at the moment, so on our roads. The size of that impacts their business because they're servicing all of those businesses. So they're impacted by new car sales, but not only new car sales. Obviously, the aftermarket affects older cars. And in particular, a lot of the products that they sell, things that people need when they get their car serviced or repaired, actually more necessary for older cars. And so a trend which has been happening for a few years now, but has actually started to accelerate a bit, is that we're seeing more and more older cars. I guess cars are being made to be more robust and to last longer. And so the average vehicle age in Australia right now is 11.7 years. And that's projected to increase to 13.3 by the end of the decade, which is actually a fairly steep rise. It had been sitting at 10.7 for about 5 years and then started to rise in 2019 and has been continuing to rise and projected that will continue further.
That's a pretty amazing figure, isn't it? It doesn't bode well for EVs, does it?
That's right. People are hanging on to their cars for longer, and you can understand why. I mean, the cars are still very functional and their maintenance costs do go up as a car gets a bit older, but they're still are very manageable. And, you know, we're hearing all this talk about cost of living pressure, et cetera. Well, if you can hang on to your old car and just, you know, fix the brakes, then that's a lot cheaper than upgrading to a brand new vehicle.
So let's dive into the Stockopedia dashboard. Did you see what I did there? Dashboard. This one's good value, but poor momentum. Is the story unrecognized?
Yeah, it's an interesting one. I mean, momentum and value do tend to move in opposite directions. And so what you're seeing here is as the price has fallen over the last month, it's dropped about 14%, that correspondingly value has risen. So I guess it's worth digging into some of the components as to what's driving those particular trends. First of all, we've seen a general weakness in retail spending. Figures came out a couple of days ago. And particularly if you look at the discretionary segments, then they have experienced actual declines over the last year. I mean, we're all hearing about inflation, but that's been more the non-discretionary things like rent, for example, whereas discretionary expenditure has been declining. Now, you could define GUD's business as covering both discretionary and somewhat non-discretionary. Obviously, if your brakes need servicing, well, that's non-discretionary. You've got to do it. But you can put off buying that great big light bar to stick across the top of your roof and those types of tricking up your car type of expenditure.
Speak for yourself, Chris.
And my four-wheel drive doesn't have the big light bar. So that's been contributing. Also, I think there's a realization has come into the market, and you've seen not just GUD, but a whole range of companies come off over the last few weeks. And even just last night, we saw the Fed, the US Fed, saying that interest rate relief or rates dropping is unlikely to come as soon as people were hoping. A lot of people were factoring in that rates were going to start dropping by the middle of this year. That's starting to look pretty optimistic. And now people are saying rates may actually increase or at least remain on hold for the remainder of this year. So that realization is starting to impact share prices across the board, and GUD is no exception. But what's interesting is the quality score is very high. I'll dig into that in a minute. But from the perspective of a value investor, what you're looking for is a business where the underlying fundamentals haven't really changed, but the price has fallen. And at that point, you can say, well, this is starting to look like a more attractive opportunity. There has been some change to the underlying business. When we look at the momentum score, as you mentioned, it's low. It's dropped to 48. There are two elements that drive momentum. One is the share price, which we've discussed, but the other is the forecasts of analysts for earnings per share. And they have also fallen, and they fell quite markedly following the half-year results release in the middle of February.
Are you picking shares on gut instinct, buying on press tips or rumours? Do you struggle to find the time to keep up with the research and analysis that goes into evaluating potential stocks? Stockopedia are pleased to offer a special deal to listeners of this podcast, a 14-day free trial and a 10% discount on the first year of membership. Sign up now at y.stockopedia.com/sfb. There's no better time to access the most comprehensive, easy-to-use investing toolbox for DIY share investors. 10% off, 14-day free trial, and a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's y.stockopedia.com/sfb. Yeah, let's dive into those results. How did the half-yearly look?
Yeah, so they weren't as exciting as we would have hoped for. Basically, there was a little bit of negative sentiment in there, and that's impacted the expectations for earnings in this year in particular, and potentially into the following year. The prospects for this company are greatly impacted by the car market, both new cars and used cars. And what has happened, and it's no surprise to anyone who's been following the car market, but there's been a big backlog following the whole COVID period. The supply chain for new vehicles in particular has really been impacted. I know a friend of mine ordered a car back in September, and they're now telling him he might get it in June if he's lucky. And so this means that orders are being deferred. They mentioned in their results a deferral from Toyota of a replenishment order. They're expecting that to return to normal in FY25. And at the same time, you've still got inflationary pressures and you've got a lot of volatility in the supply chain. So whilst things might be stabilizing a bit, that sort of negative sentiment in the short term at least is going to have an impact on their results. Analysts are still forecasting EPS growth of 12%, but they are expecting revenue to be flat. And whilst that EPS growth sounds good at 12%, it is a decline on what they were forecasting, say, late last year.
It's rated as a buy to a strong buy by 11 brokers. And this is even after the disappointing earning results. Is analyst consensus worth noting in general?
Yeah, I mean, I found that quite interesting. And I think what that reflects is the comments we made earlier around most brokers, when they choose their recommendation, buy, sell, hold, etc., they do that by looking at the current price and comparing it to their price target. In other words, it's a pretty much a value-based philosophy. And so what happens, of course, is at prices falling, then the level that they have set where this becomes a buy versus a strong buy, it starts to break those levels. And so the arrow, if you like, the consensus broker forecast is moving more towards the buy side of that spectrum. And so, it's purely, in my opinion, a function of price. And it's worth looking at. I'd do your own research, but it's certainly worth seeing. Does that confirm what you were thinking yourself? I think what's worth noting with this business is that, we've discussed there is a bit of short-term negative sentiment. But if we look at the longer term, the question becomes, does this now represent an opportunity, or are we seeing trends, negative trends that are going to continue to play out into the future? And it's just worth noting that over the last 18 months, the quality score has gone from 67 to 97. That's been driven by what we call the health score, which has gone from 3 to 8, and that's out of 9. Return on equity has doubled from 6% to 12%. Operating margins have gone from 10.6 to 16.4. So these are big positive jumps. Looking at the balance sheet, users of Stockopedia might note that it has shows as cautious in terms of bankruptcy risk, which, you know, is a little bit of a cause for concern. But if you'd looked at it 12 months ago, it was showing actually as distress. They have paid down a lot of debt. They reduced their borrowings by $70 million just in the most recent half year. Their net debt to equity ratio is down to 38% now, or 50% if you include leases. They've got a lot of additional lending facilities that they haven't utilized, $280 million worth. The reasons that the bankruptcy risk is showing as high is that they have a low portion of liquid assets on their balance sheet, and this level of sales is low compared to assets. And when you look at their balance sheet, their assets are really, there's a major contributor from intangible assets. 64% of their total assets are intangibles. And that basically is a result of all these acquisitions that they have been making over the recent years.
Is this like brand names?
Well, yeah, brand names are part of it, but goodwill is the other part. So goodwill is basically where you buy a business and the amount that you pay exceeds the identifiable assets, and there's a lot of goodwill on their balance sheet.
What's the competitive environment like for them? I mean, ARB comes to mind. Would they be considered a competitor?
Yeah, ARB and Bapcorp are probably the two big competitors for these guys. It's a healthy competitive environment. They're certainly not islands in this space.
So, Chris, any final thoughts on GUD?
Yeah, sure. So, I mean, we've talked a bit about some of the trends, both long-term and short-term. And one of those long-term trends is the positive aspect of the car park growing and continuing, and also aging. You know, those are positives. The short-term, they're going to have to deal with some of this hangover from the COVID period and the supply chain effects of that. But I think if you look at it with that long-term perspective, you've got a real longevity in the management team. The key people have been there for a long time, the CEO since 2018. You've now got this singular focus, which I think personally is a good thing. They really are able to specialize in this whole area of the automotive parts and accessories. They are going to face the short-term pressure, but if you believe the long-term story, the price weakness may indeed represent an opportunity. Opportunities always feel uncomfortable, but maybe this is one of those.
Thanks for leaving us with an uncomfortable feeling, Chris.
No problem. I think that's my job.
Thanks for listening to Shares for Beginners. You can find more at sharesforbeginners.com. If you enjoy listening, please take a moment to rate or review in your podcast player, or tell a friend who might want to learn more about investing for their future.